House Republicans have been preparing to vote on the SHARE Act, which is short for Sportsman Heritage and Recreational Enhancement Act. It includes provisions that would deregulate silencers or suppressors and allow armor-piercing bullets. The shooting in Las Vegas has led to a tabling of the legislation for now, though it is expected to return in the near future. For a deeper perspective on the SHARE Act and what it would potentially change for the public and law enforcement, I'm joined by Seth Stoughton. He's an assistant professor of law at the University of South Carolina and a former police officer. Seth, what SHARE Act provisions are most concerning to law enforcement officers?
For decades now, there's been a concern in law enforcement about being outgunned by a criminal element. And the SHARE Act has two provisions that are particularly concerning from that perspective. One is a loosening of the restrictions on suppressors, that is, devices that go on the end of guns, the muzzles of guns, that dampen some of the sound of a gun firing. And the other is a loosening of a restriction on certain types of ammunition, what's popularly called armor-piercing ammunition.
I know hunters will often address this, but in general, what is the point of having a silencer on a weapon?
Well, there are a couple. The sportsman view of it, the hunter's perspective that's being championed by some politicians who are supporting the SHARE Act, is by dampening the sound, you reduce the potential damage that hunters or hobbyist shooters face. It should come as no surprise that guns are loud, and that repeated exposure to loud noises can damage human hearing. So the proposed or the purported explanation is if we reduce the sound of guns by allowing hobbyists and huntsmen to use suppressors, then it will preserve their hearing. The concern, of course, is that in an emergency situation or in a law enforcement context, dealing with an active shooter, officers rely in part on the sound of the firearm to identify the shooter's location, as does the public. We have seen a number of incidents, most recently the mass shooting in Las Vegas, where people ran from the sound of gunshots. People were first clued into the fact that this horrific situation was going on based on sound. And there was an argument, or at least there was some initial disagreement about whether it was fireworks or whether it was gunshots. The point is, they weren't looking at the results of gunshots, they were hearing the sounds of gunshots. So as you reduce the sound of gunshots, you reduce the ability of officers and other members of the public who are in the area to identify whether there is a shooting going on and where the shooter is located.
Is there a way to have suppressors and silencers that are only used for hunting, for sport, and yet I suppose it would be quite easy to then not end up using it for hunting or sport, right? You can't just apply it to certain weapons and not others.
Yeah, this is the truism of what's known as gray and black markets. So we have what's called a white market. We have a legal market for firearms, for prescription drugs, for suppressors, for example. They're not always illegal. They're just tightly regulated. But the more of any particular product that you have in the white market, the more likely it is to end up in a gray market, which is a market of questionable legality, or a black market, a market where the transactions, the possessions, and sale of that item are illegal. The more of something there is, the more likely it is to get into the hands that we don't want it to be in. Unfortunately, there is no way to completely restrict something to a legal context. This is a problem that isn't restricted to guns. We see it in a number of different areas, including, as I mentioned, prescription drugs, including alcohol, for example. So it's not a new problem. It is one that I would hope we have learned by now, but maybe I'm being unduly optimistic.
How much more dangerous is the world of law enforcement potentially in a world with silencer suppressors more actively present and also armor-piercing bullets? And also, do lawmakers think about that when they're going through this process? Is there a lot of lobbying done by law enforcement against this sort of legislation?
It can put officers at significantly more danger. The more well-armed a criminal is, the greater the criminal's ability to evade detection by law enforcement, the more danger officers are in. There's ample evidence that an increase in guns, and particularly dangerous guns, endangers officers. There was a study, I believe, last year that found that officer deaths by guns, that is, when officers were feloniously killed by firearm, is correlated with states that have more firearms. To break it down very simply, the more guns there are in a state, the more likely it is that officers in that state or that jurisdiction are going to be killed by a firearm. Is that considered in the political process, or how much do police get involved in lobbying on those fronts? Not as much as they used to. Prior to about the mid-90s, police agencies and police lobbyists, police union groups, were very heavily involved in lobbying on gun regulations. The primary concern that they had in that context was making sure, again, that they weren't being outgunned, that officers weren't being confronted with firepower that they could not hope to match on the street. Over the last roughly 20 years, the NRA position has seeped into the police lobby. So there's a much less active lobbying by most police organizations for gun regulation measures.
Seth Stoughton is an assistant professor of law at the University of South Carolina. We've been talking about the SHARE Act, which House Republicans have temporarily tabled.